I'm Paul Vanvess, the host of Curiosity Never Retires. We're a podcast from OLLI at American University, an adult education organization that gives mostly, but not only, retired seniors the chance to study and teach topics they have always been interested in. There are so many of those subjects and so many classes dealing with them that we thought it would be a good idea to give you a preview of some of them to help you decide what you might like to take. That brings us to this episode with Dan Moskowitz, who's been sharing his love and knowledge of American popular music at OLLI for many years. This fall, he's going to be talking about a unique program at the Library of Congress that helps preserve that music for future generations. Welcome, Dan.
Hello.
Dan, talk to us a little bit about the registry and how old it is and when did it start, that sort of thing.
Right. Well, Congress in the year 2000 passed a law telling the Library of Congress to set up a registry of recordings that would have the kind of protection that would make sure that future generations would be able to hear them. It's meant to chart all of American history as told through recordings. Now, every year, the Library of Congress sets aside 25 recordings. The first few years, there were 50, so we now have a number of 675, quote, recordings. Now, some of those, quote, recordings are actually collections, so they're actually thousands. They cut across all genres, which probably means that most of them are obscure to the ordinary citizen, because pop and jazz are only a couple of these many genres.
So how many people are in this group that decide who gets in the registry?
There are approximately 10 representatives of different organizations, things like the American Federation of Musicians, the Audio Engineering Society, the Digital Media Association, etc. Then there are six or seven who are appointed by the Librarian of Congress. In addition, the Library of Congress has a process by which ordinary citizens can make recommendations. And in recent years, there have been people who've been enthusiastically behind, organized campaigns. And three, four, maybe even as many as five come from those citizen recommendations.
That's interesting that it comes from non-experts and regular citizens, because I think everyone could probably make up what they consider their own list of recordings that they think should be listed.
In a way, I am more surprised by people who aren't on the registry. Dinah Shore's not on the registry. The popular music of my life is music from World War II. And there's very little of that, I'll be faithful, don't sit under the apple tree. Almost none of those songs are there. On the other hand, there are a lot of, say, folk songs, of recordings by Native American chiefs, that kind of thing that I think almost none of us have ever heard of, but are for ethnomusical reasons important.
I think one of the ones that you told me about prior to us talking today that surprised me was Roy Rogers.
Yes, well, we were talking just a minute ago about citizen recommendations, and one of the records added in 2025 was Happy Trails because of citizen push. Now, as a matter of fact, Happy Trails is the second time that Roy Rogers was added to the registry, because some years ago they had a Sons of the Pioneer record, and he was one of the Sons of the Pioneer. But Happy Trails is a song that Rogers recorded with his wife, Dale Evans, who wrote it. They had as their radio show theme a happy cowboy song. But after they got married, he was her third husband, they had a child with Down syndrome. And Dale Evans felt that, yes, they wanted happiness, but what made a cowboy's life worth lauding was the fact that they were there all the time. They were there in the rain as well as the sunshine. So she wanted to replace their happy, happy song with a song that was happy, but that said there's also rain in life.
Happy prayers to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds when we're together?
Just sing a song and bring the sunny way.
Now, that really brings back memories for me because I grew up with Roy Rogers on TV. I could sing that for you, but I'll spare you.
Well, as a matter of fact, it started on in their last year of radio before it moved on to TV.
There are some recordings, are there not, that are there on the registry because the libraries want the artist represented, and it doesn't matter as much which record it is.
That is my interpretation. That is nothing like what they say. Frank Sinatra, they have no records from the 40s. They have his comeback record. Al Jolson or Sophie Tucker, Andrews Sisters. You have a feeling that they said, okay, we want a representation of this sound. That is my interpretation. They're not saying this, but when they have one and only one and it could be something else instead. That's my feeling. Now, there are a very few artists like Roy Rogers, Bing Crosby, Marian Anderson, who have two records. And there's one artist that has three. Do you want to guess who that is?
No.
Okay, Louis Armstrong.
That's great. Well, that's understandable, given his history. How does genre play into this?
Very much. There are a lot of records, a lot of the 675, that are there as a representation of a particular element of American life. You feel trying to fill up that genre. Clearly, it comes and goes because, like pop music, there have been almost nothing added in the last 10 years, but they clearly are trying to represent all elements of what was recorded. They are not consistent, and they are underfunded, so they haven't really had the funds to correct their inconsistencies. So in some of their lists, you have a genre called gospel. That doesn't exist in other lists that are accessible from the same site. There's something called religion instead.
One of the things that I found really interesting, because obviously you can understand if people focused on the artists and on the recordings and on the genre, but there are some recordings on the registry that are there for reasons other than any of that, right? Some like satirist Tom Lehrer or the original cast album of Kiss Me, Kate.
Yeah, if you're my generation, you think Tom Lehrer should be there. But he's there for commercial reasons. His recording, his first recording, was the first self-recording that was a commercial success. I mean, he rented a studio, he recorded them, he took the records around to record stores in Boston. Once they managed to sell, he started knocking on doors of record stores in New York City. And it's only because of the success of those that he finally got a commercial thing. So that is the Library of Congress's explanation. Kiss Me, Kate, I think, would probably be there anyway as one of the best-selling original cast albums. But it was the first original cast album made on tape and therefore was a great step up in fidelity from the previous, from Oklahoma, and all those very successful and important records. But just if you have an ear like mine, you don't hear it. But if you really know acoustics, it was a step forward.
So with all these different artists and genres and other reasons, are there any through themes in the process?
Well, one that you see over and over is the people speak. After all, recording is a business. Some here, they're done for academic reasons, but mostly it's a business. And the people in charge of record companies are trying to come up with things that sell. And often you see that what they think is going to sell isn't what the people are asking for. The best example of that is Begin the Begin. Let me go back a little bit. There are example after example of the public saying, no, what we like isn't what you thought we'd like. Elvis Presley's Hound Dog, Bill Haley's Rock Around the Clock were B-sides. But the very best example of that is Artie Shaw's Begin the Begin. Begin the Begin is an extremely complex song. It just throws out all the rules about how you write popular songs. It was a Cole Porter musical called Jubilee, and after the show, nobody was interested in touching it. It was so complex. Except Artie Shaw had seen the show, the song stuck with him, and he wanted to do it. He had a new contract with RCA, put together a new 14-piece band, and wanted to record Begin the Begin. RCA didn't want to get anywhere near it. This record was a sort of swing version of Indian Love Call. And they went back and forth. And the people at RCA finally decided that this Indian Love Call was going to be such a hit, it didn't matter what was on the B-side. So let him do Begin the Begin. Well, of course, Begin the Begin took off. His version of it has never been out of print. It was the number two record for the entire decade of the 1930s. Judy Garland's Over the Rainbow was the only thing that outsold it. So it was a question of just people saying, that's the song we want.
Well, Dan, you can see why it was so popular. It is beautiful. The whole class sounds fascinating. And of course, the people taking your course will get to listen to that and a whole lot of other great music along the way. So the best of luck with this.
Thank you.
Curiosity Never Retires is produced by myself, David Flaxman, Andrew Hiller, and Jesse Williams. Our theme music is education music from Background Music for video by Pixabay. You can see our complete fall course catalog at olli-dc.org. That's olli-dc.org. Please look for other episodes of Curiosity Never Retires to learn more about some of our fall offerings. I'm Paul Vambus. Stay curious.